Hello everyone, I'm Imelda Staunton as Squidward in SpongeBob the Musical at the National Theater.
And I'm Clay Aiken as Fiero in the 30th anniversary of Wicked the Musical.
And this podcast won't run a week, your bi-weekly musical theater podcast where we talk about musicals. Hey guys, we're back. It's a balmy Wednesday in September.
Yeah, it's rough. It's fucking hot outside.
Here in New York City. But we're here.
Concrete jungle where sweat is made from.
It's true. All sweat comes from New York. They have to bottle that, like, ship it out. It's our main export.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's our only export.
it's our only export.
Yeah.
How the hell are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Yeah, I've been doing really well. I started taking, did I talk about this? No, we didn't talk about it last time. I started taking an antidepressant for the first time. And it's great. And I feel like I'm talking about it so much, but I just want to like bring awareness to the fact that I was so afraid of being diagnosed or like taking a medication because I thought it was some sort of like failure. Ooh, we are just jumping into the pod today.
We're just jumping in. We're getting deep.
We're getting deep quick. Good morning.
Good morning.
But I like for a long time really thought it was like a failure, not on anybody else's part, but like a personal failure if I couldn't do it on my own, you know? And it's always the age old thing of you can celebrate other people, but you can't like do the same thing for yourself, right?
Yeah.
So like I just want to like scream it from the rooftops that if you are questioning if you need to talk to someone about being medicated, just go talk to someone. That's the first step.
Yeah.
And I am like, it's only been a month, but like I really think this is like life-changing for me.
Truly, being medicated regularly has made like not to get too deep, I've been in and out of therapy since I was in high school, like freshman year of high school, so of course that is also helpful, but being medicated has changed my quality of life in ways that therapy just could never.
And
it's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And, like, I just, like, I saw this on TikTok, and I keep saying it because it's the best way to describe it. Like, you don't have to raw dog life.
No. No.
Like, I have been over here raw dogging life when I am not, to continue the metaphor, I am not, like, married and trying to have children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, slap a condom on.
Slap a condom on. It's okay.
Slap a condom on. It's okay.
Put a little
it's
lube
good
on there. It makes it better. I think that's the better way to say it. Is like throw in some lube.
Yeah, throw in some lube or like a little ring.
Yeah,
you know?
A little toy.
Yeah, add a toy to the mix.
Yeah. Well, I really thought I was gonna be like feel like I was on drugs, but I don't. I just feel like me.
Yeah, it's just like a little.
Yeah.
A few chemicals to help your brain, like, do the thing it's supposed to do, but for whatever reason it doesn't.
Do the thing it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's fantastic. It's great.
It's beautiful.
So if anybody is, like, you know, thinking about it. I'm just thinking about it.
I'm just thinking about it.
Just go ask. Just go go to one psychiatry session and see what is up.
Yeah.
My psychiatrist is great, too, so.
That's awesome. That's a big thing, too.
Yeah.
Well, I am back from my trip to do Spring Awakening in North Carolina.
How was it?
It was amazing. It was so great. It was wild to be at my alma mater almost 10 years after I graduated.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. But, like, the students were so cool. Oh. And I really loved working with them. And the director, Mr. Nicholas Fuqua, was...
What a name.
I know. He was amazing and, like, such a delight to work with. And it was great. It was dope. I 100% would go back if they asked. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Hint, nudge, nudgy.
But it was awesome. I got to meet some cool people and I got to see people. There was one night I went to see a show and like six people from my past were all there for some, like an absurd number of people that I knew
that
were all
so
there.
Iconic.
And I was like, what the fuck are you all doing here? But it was very fun. It was very rewarding. I'm very glad to be back in my home and to be just, you know, back doing life. I have callbacks for another show I'm working on, and
okay,
I'm current now that Spring Awakening is done. I can, well, actually it's not done. I have to zoom into some rehearsals, but technically I'm working on four shows right now.
Icon.
She's booked and busy.
Zero to hero, booked. Honestly.
Zero to hero, yeah. So, things are good. Saw Bottoms, the movie. Was so fucking funny.
So funny. I knew it was going to be, like, good. Like, I was excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was not prepared for how funny it was.
It was so funny.
I went in sober and I laughed as if I was high. Like,
I haven't, like, laughed out loud like that in a movie theater, I think, since Megan. I think Megan was the last time I remember laughing out loud.
It's in a similar world as Megan, like, that absurdist comedy.
Yeah. Truly absurd.
It is so absurd. The guy who plays Jeff.
Oh, Jeff. But also his friend.
Oh, my God. His friend.
Oh, it was so funny. It was so fucking funny.
Jeff! It's, yeah, go see it, y'all.
He, like, licks the football field. Pineapple juice! It was great. It was so funny, I mean, and, like...
Yeah, I don't want to ruin anything, but the final sequence...
The final sequence was crazy. I was like... Crazy. Just, and Marshawn Lynch, also incredible.
Marshawn Lynch, give that man an Oscar.
Give him an Oscar. Put him in more shit. I think he is so funny. God,
and I saw it at the Alamo, so they did, like, a compilation of his, like, interviews that he'd been on. And
yes.
He is so funny.
Wait, when did you see this movie? When did you see Bottoms?
This weekend.
Like, this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious. I'm like, what if we saw it at the same time and we didn't know?
I went to Lower Manhattan.
Oh, then I went to downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah, I saw some friends from that live in Manhattan. Gotcha. I went to go see it with Hannah and Erica.
Oh, perfect group.
I know. My lesbian mom and mom.
Yep. Oh, we love a lesbian.
We love a lesbian.
We do. Period. End of sentence. So we both saw Bottoms. That was great. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend.
And
this is the big thing that we have to discuss, and I've been waiting to discuss on the podcast. And this is also a little in memoriam.
I saw Once Upon a One More Time.
It was so
good. I was really shocked by how much I loved it. It is honestly... My God, this list is fucking bonkers. My top shows I've seen this year. Yeah. Parade and Once Upon a One More Time.
An arc. A true arc. A range.
I laughed so hard during Once Upon a One More Time.
So hard.
It's the same. Again, it's that absurdist comedy. Like, like bottoms. Like, it was the same tone.
Oh, my. It was Jennifer Simard.
Jennifer Simard was stupid. She was so funny and so smart. Like, her humor was so, like, absurd, but yet so intelligent.
She is a master of comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm, it's one of those things where it's, I've been following her since, like, Disaster. That was my first introduction to her. Although I know she was around long before that.
Shrek, baby. Her Broadway debut.
Shrek, baby. Oh, that's right. She was in Shrek.
Yeah, she was
Life is but a witch hunt. I forgot about that. Well, I guess technically I've been following her since Shrek, but knowing that it's her since Disaster.
We saw her Broadway debut.
We did. We're stans of Jennifer Simard.
We're stans.
But she's so incredible, and it's so exciting to see her star rising in the way that it is, because she's going to be in Death Becomes Her.
Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
I can't
That's
wait.
Brilliant.
I cannot wait for that.
I can't either. But Once Upon a One More Time, she's obviously incredible.
Incredible. What's the his prince? Face? What is his face from American Idol?
Justin Guarini, I think. I don't know how you pronounce his last name.
I was like, my jaw was on the ground every time he was on stage. He was so funny.
So funny. So fucking good. I was like, we can get into the fact that this is supposed to be like a feminist musical, but one of the best characters is the fucking misogynist prince.
Okay,
like,
but men, listen to the theme that what we've been talking about this for like a couple episodes now, with Barbie, with Once Upon a One More Time, with bottoms. Misogynistic men written by women is such a hilarious trope.
So fucking funny.
And the men that understand the joke are icons.
Truly. Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling.
Just
Jeff. And
Justin Guarini.
Guarini. Gristides.
Yeah. Yeah. When Circus, of course, was amazing. That's the clip that I've seen the most on their social media. But I loved Oops, I Did It Again.
Oh, yeah.
I loved Oops, I Did It Again.
That's when he shone.
I was like, where is this video? That's the video I want to see.
And you know, we talked about this during Stranger Things, like, releasing... Because, like, I don't think Titanic is doing this either, but, like, releasing some of the more, like, absurd comedy. Like, why don't we see more of it? But if they released the absurd comedy and then you go into the theater, it wouldn't nearly be as, like, shocking.
True.
Because you already know about it. But now it's closed. Oh, it's going to get a Vegas run. It's going to get a tour.
Oh.
It is going to be all over the place.
I made it through Act One and I was like, this is a Vegas show.
Yep.
Yeah. This is a Vegas show. It's going to do so well.
And I cannot wait to swing that show. So I'm putting that in the universe that's going to be my first swing job.
I loved it. I loved it. And it was one of those shows where I started it and I was like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't know what I was going into. I didn't understand the tone when I, like, sat down. So, but by the time, like, intermission hit, I was like, okay, I know
what. The first number, I was like, this is so good.
I was enjoying it. I was like, obviously the quality is great, but for some reason I was like, I just wasn't mentally prepared for the tone of the show, I guess.
Me either. No, I wasn't prepared for it.
But like, by the time it was like second act, we're like really in the thick of it. I was like, I understand exactly what we're doing. I get it. And it's one of those shows where I left and I was like, yeah, that was really good. That was fun. I had a good time. And the more I sit with it, the more I'm like, I think I loved that show.
Yeah.
No, I loved that show. I loved it.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it a second time before it closed, but
I went with someone I went with Alex Dash, who stage managed Stranger Things, and he had seen it before. And he was like, I want to see the show with you. And I was like, okay, work. Like, we're going to go in. We're going to, like, make fun and, like, have fun and be like, oh, my God, what a stupid little show. Yeah. And I was like, he was, like, being really kind of quiet as I was, like, making
just
fun of,
bashing,
like,
it.
Yeah, bashing it before the show. And then the show started and I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, no, I know.
I know. Yeah, I know. My God. Well, I heard a story. So for anyone who didn't get to see the show or doesn't know what we're talking about, this is in the future for you. First, welcome. Welcome future people. But when you saw the show, they gave you these like wristbands that would like light up at the end of the show during the Megamix. Because of course there's a Megamix. There had to be.
There had to be.
It called for it. But I heard it was like a friend of a friend who saw the show an obscene number of times, I was told. Not given a number, but the word obscene was used.
Okay.
And when she was telling me about this person, she was like, yeah, he didn't want to, like, keep spending money. Because even if you're, like, buying a cheap ticket, it's, like, $40 a ticket. That adds up. So he started, because it was in the marquee. It was in a fucking hotel. Mm-hmm. So he would just put one of his wristbands on and just, like, walk up to, like, the balcony and be like, hey, sorry, I went to the bathroom. And they would just let him in. No one's checking tickets up at the balcony.
No one's checking tickets, and no one will check a ticket if they see that you've got the wristband on.
Exactly. I was like, that
is genius.
That is fucking genius, and I'm so angry that I didn't think of it.
Yeah.
Oh, but it was phenomenal. It was so good. I'm sad that it closed. I was like, I want this show to run till I get married, because I want the week of my wedding to take all of my bridesmaids to go see it. Oh, my Mark. God. When, like, she pulls the shoe apart and the, like, glitter with the...
Oh, my God.
Ah!
It's what Let It Go wants to be on Broadway.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
I wasn't ready for it to be so feminist.
It was... Oh,
also,
my gosh.
I know Toxic is, like, the song, oh, right? Like, I know. I wasn't expecting, though, to, like, have it leveled up even more because of how evil it was. It was so dark.
It was so fucking...
They're like, the stakes good that they put in that number, I was like,
oh, shit.
Oh, we're, like, going there. Okay. Work.
Oh, my God. I love that they didn't change a single lyric of Toxic.
No.
Didn't change a single one. But you know what lyric they did change?
What?
Womanizer to princessizer.
Yes.
Which I was like, that didn't need to be changed.
So
it's the
funny.
Same thing.
It's so
it
funny.
So, it was so
princessizer,
funny.
Princessizer, baby,
princessizer,
baby,
you're
a
princessizer. Oh my gosh. Look.
The vocals.
The vocals were incredible. If anyone is looking for a girl to play a stepsister, call me.
No, you and me as those stepsisters.
Iconic. And you better then, work, bitch.
You want a man body? You want a Maserati? What is it? You want a hot body? You want a Maserati? Like, so this is what I want to do. I want to, mm-hmm. So this is apparently a track built into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. Is like just kind of like chilling on stage as like ensemble, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is a swing for a stepsister and mm-hmm. for the evil queen.
Boom.
And I'm like, that is my track.
Yeah. Sign me up.
Like, or cast me as a stepsister, obviously. And like, but yeah. But Ryan, the person who is out because of her mm-hmm. ankle, which is mm-hmm. so sad that she missed the
so
entire
sad.
Run. She missed the entire run because of her ankle. Oh,
that sucks.
That sucks.
That sucks.
But she is the understudy for Jennifer Simard. So, like, that track. And
whoa.
I'm like, there we go. That is what I... It's just looking... Okay. Someone recently told me... Who was it? Oh, it was Michael Kushner. LOL. It was Michael Kushner at my headshot session. He was like, you should go in for the Madame Morrible understudy. And I was like, eye roll, like, yeah, sure. And then he goes, no, no. There is someone who's your age who is swinging Madame Morrible and, like, another, you know, ensemble track on the tour who's, like, your type. And I was like, oh. Oh, wait a minute. If I think about what shows I'm right for, it's not like I have to wait until I'm 50 to play those roles. I just need to get in as a swing and then swing a bunch of the roles. Yeah. I just, like, never thought about it like that because we don't talk about it in college. You don't talk about, like, swinging and understudy. It's actually, like, looked down upon.
Yeah. Oh, it's, like, embarrassing.
Yes. And I'm like, oh, no, no. That's the way in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or at least it was. Maybe it's different now in college to have, like, swings and understudies. But when we were in school, it was very, like...
It was really frowned upon. Yeah, like, you'll be like, you don't want to get stuck being an understudy.
Yeah. It's like, I would love to be an understudy. Sign me up. People make full careers of being an understudy. And that's fucking great. Well, enough about all of that. Let's talk about Little Shop.
Let's talk about Little Shop. Well, first off, we are in our... like our month of our anniversary. Yeah. We've been recording for three years.
I can't believe it.
It is bonkers town that we have been recording for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So proud of us. Look at us go.
Look at us go.
Like, couldn't have done it without you.
Couldn't have done it without you.
I know. I know you couldn't.
It just would have been one of us talking to ourselves the whole time.
Which, don't tempt me.
Don't tempt me.
I could make it happen.
I'll do it.
I could make it happen.
But we decided, since we're hitting our, like, third year, we looked back at some of our old episodes from the very beginning, and it's like, for me at least, it felt like one of those things where you, like, look back and you see, like, work you did when you were really young and you didn't know what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, like, I feel a little nostalgic about it. It's very sweet, like, oh, but also, like, oh.
Well, we just have, like, learned a lot, and also, like, we got a rhythm, and
yeah.
I also think we did a lot of our favorite shows at the very beginning. Like, this is one of our favorite shows ever, and and this was our first episode we ever did, so we're just wanting to talk about it with the guys.
Revisit, yeah.
Of what we know now and how to talk about it. With better microphones.
With better microphones.
Yeah.
An incredible sound engineer or audio engineer.
Yes. Jackson.
Shout out Jackson. Jackson.
Yeah, so this starts our reunion month. So look out for revamped episodes.
We'll be doing revamped episodes for a while.
Yeah.
Because why not? Because it's our show.
It's our show.
Not yours.
And not yours, baby. Okay, so with that, we're talking about Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Fun fact, this was the first musical I ever fell in love with.
I fell hard for this show.
It was like the first musical movie that I ever saw and was like, oh, I can do that. Like, that's what musical theater can be. And it really shaped my, I mean, it has everything for me. It has comedy, it has horror, and it has like a rock music sound, you know, like a rock musical theater sound of that time. I just, like, it's a perfect show for my type of, and I don't mean, like, actor type, I mean my, like, viewer audience as an audience member. Like, this is made, curated for someone like me.
Yeah.
So it is, like, super campy, it's just great. And it's got Ellen Green.
And it has Ellen Green!
Yeah.
Ellen Green. Can't miss.
Can't miss.
Can't miss.
So Little Shop of Horrors is a horror comedy rock musical, like I said, and it's by Alan Menken, who also did my favorite, which I've never actually thought about this, also wrote the music for my favorite Disney movie, The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
There's like a through line there that I've never really thought about.
Yeah.
So the musical is like loosely based on a low budget comedy from the 60s called The Little Shop of Horrors. And it is very different from the musical, but that's why it's loosely based. But the tone is very similar. So it's like Hairspray as well, like the John Waters Hairspray movie, which those are closer, but you know, anyway, I digress. Yeah. Menken composed the music in the style of an early 1960s rock and like doo-wop and Motown. And we get those bops.
This show truly is like bop after bop.
It is a bop show. Love it. Yeah. Which makes sense that it's like 1960s rock inspired, because all 1960s was bops. So it premiered off Broadway in 1982, and then it moved to the Orpheum Theater off Broadway, where it had a 5-year run. It has received numerous productions, and it's had a Broadway production, which was not super successful, but it did happen. And then there was a movie made in 1986 directed by Frank Oz, which is how I fell in love with the show. And it's a really good adaptation. The ending is different. Like from the minute that Audrey, which we'll get into this, but like the minute that Audrey 2 becomes its full self, the rest of the show is different.
Yeah.
From the movie and the show. So, like, the last, like, 15 minutes, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like I said, it's off Broadway premiere in 1982, at the Workshop of the Players Art Foundation, and it played there until June 6th, so it ran for a full month. And then it opened in the East Village, which is a perfect place for it, off Broadway in 1982. It was directed by Howard Ashman, and it was staged by Edie Cohen, which didn't know that, was critically acclaimed and won several awards, including Drama Desk Awards for Outstanding Musical, as well as a New York Drama Critics Circle Award for Best Musical. Yeah. And an Outer Critics Award. Like, it just took the world by storm.
Yeah. The Titanic of its time.
Actually. Howard Ashman wrote in the introduction of the acting libretto that the show, quote, satirizes many things, colon, science fiction, B-movies, musical comedy itself, and even the Faust legend, unquote. Which I think that's totally correct. Yeah, in itself is a, like, again, like Titanic. Yes, it's a parody of something, but it's like, it's its own entity.
It's its own thing. Yeah.
With satirizing all of the above.
Yeah.
Love. So the cast, the original cast starred Lee Wilcoff as Seymour, Ellen Green as Audrey, Hi Enzel as Mr. Mushnick, Frank Luz as Oren, and then Leilani Jones was a replacement for Chiffon. Ron Taylor was the voice of Audrey 2, and then Martin P. Robinson was the puppeteer for Audrey 2, which we'll get into, like, that. Yeah, because this show needs a puppeteer. It closed November 1st, 1987, with a whopping 2,209 performances.
Yeah.
Insane. It was the third longest running musical, and highest grossing production in off-Broadway history.
That's not surprising at all.
No. Because it is a great show.
It really is.
So, though a Broadway transfer had been proposed from the original off-Broadway production, Ashman felt that the show belonged where it was in a more intimate house. I totally agree.
Yes.
It was not produced on Broadway, but the original production was ineligible for Tony Awards, which obviously... And another thing, the Audrey 2 puppets were designed by the puppeteer himself, Martin P. Robinson.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Very cool.
Okay. And Cameron McIntosh was one of the producers.
He's got a nose for hits, Cameron McIntosh.
He really does. The original cast recording, you can listen to, was released in 1982. Songs that were omitted... or Call Back in the Morning, which is a bummer, because I love that song.
Love that song.
The reprise of Somewhere That's Green, and an abridged version of Now It's Just the Gas, Mushnick and Son. Oh, it had abridged versions of Now It's Just the Gas, Mushnick and Son, and The Meek Shall Inherit, which is so strange that they, put out abridged versions of these things, but, you know... off-Broadway and development stuff, like...
I'm curious if it had something to do with the way that, like, audio was recorded. Maybe they only wanted, like... You can only record so much. Like, if it was on vinyl, you can only record a certain amount of time.
Oh, maybe.
So maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe.
But then they shifted the location of the song Closed for Renovation.
So weird.
So weird.
So weird.
They wanted there to be an upbeat bridge from Oren's death in Act 2 to the ballad into Suddenly Seymour.
All right. You know what? Okay.
Yeah, sure. I guess they just, back then, like you're saying, that it was just different for cast recordings.
Yeah.
It's not like how it is now where you listen to, like, the full show experience. You're, like, listening more for the bop of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, like, audio was recorded differently, and also people weren't listening to music the way that we listen to music now. You know? Where it was, like, back in, like, the 60s or even the 80s, you know, maybe in the 80s you had like a Walkman or something, but like now it's literally on our phone and we carry with us everywhere. Yada, yada, yada.
Yes, I agree. Like and I think about like binging television as well. I just recently started watching. Well, I started to watch Grey's Anatomy.
Oof, girl.
I've never watched an episode before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, like, gonna jump in and, like, kind of have this thing that I can just watch in the background. But binge-watching stuff like that, like, things that came out in a world where you had to watch it once a week, you start to recognize a pattern because you're binging it in a way that you don't recognize.
When you're watching it once a week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just funny how art shifts because of the way we take in the art.
Yeah.
And, like, how do we evolve in that way? And, like, little things like that. Like, oh, our formula has to be different. So limited series actually works a lot better in a binge world.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, a 20-season thing because people get bored of it.
Yeah.
And it's not because it isn't good. It just is because you can't binge 20 seasons. Like, it's not.
No. Yeah, unless you're, like, doing the thing that, like, Netflix did for a time where it was, like, release a couple of episodes, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Release a couple more episodes, wait. Like...
Which is smart.
And I used to binge watch things all the time. Like, that was my number one hobby. I haven't truly binge watched something in a minute.
I don't think I have really either. Well, that's not true. I binge watched Succession, and that was worth it.
I mean, I have not watched most of Succession. I want to. I just
it's so good.
I watched the first like two episodes, and I really couldn't get past Kieran McCulkin tearing up that check in front of that kid, and I was like, I need a moment to like.
Oh, maybe
really
you
deal.
Won't like it then.
It wasn't that I was like hurt or anything. I was like, that is just one of the most abhorrent things I've ever seen any person do to someone else on TV.
That's what I'm saying. Then maybe you won't like it because it gets way worse.
I'm sure that I'll be able to get into it. I wasn't in the right place. So I need to.
Well, once you start, you will get. If you watch the third episode.
Yeah.
It's like one of those, right? It's like just get past the first two episodes.
Yeah.
And then you're on the train.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, Little Shop.
Succession, Little Shop.
Same thing.
Same thing. Yeah, so then there was West End Production that was also produced by Cameron McIntosh. And there have been Canadian productions, Australian productions, and now there is an off-Broadway production happening at the West End Theater, which is just cranking out stars like
truly,
it is their job.
Truly, just.
I mean, they just announced Constance Wu and Corbin Bleu.
Yes.
Which I am really excited for Constance Wu. I've never heard her sing.
Me either.
But that is actually very good casting for Audrey, I think.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
I saw Rob McClure as Seymour, which the first time we cast this, Rob McClure was my Seymour. In the original, yeah. In the original time we did the Dreamcast. So I was like, yeah. Work.
Work.
Yeah. And Bryce Pinkham was not, was not my dentist. He was out. I was so upset. But The Understudy was great. It was his first night that he ever did it.
Aww.
Yeah.
Great.
So that was cool.
I love that. Yeah.
And Lena Hall was my Audrey. And I was very excited for that. I'm very picky with my Audreys. I was very excited for Lena Hall. And she sang the shit out of it.
Yeah. As she should and would.
Yeah. Her comedy wasn't as there as I wanted it to be. It was a darker, they have a darker take on Audrey in this production. But it's
literally
still,
because her hair's brown, right?
Her hair is literally brown. Well, Lena Hall's was.
Gotcha.
And Joy. It's Joy Woods. Joy Woods is also really good casting.
Oh, yeah. Her,
wow.
The clips
her voice.
I've heard of her, she's woo. Fucking... Whew.
Yeah, so good. So good. Yeah, Christian Borle originated the dentist in this production, which is awesome. Brad Oscar is Mushnick, and he's amazing. Yeah, it's great. And the production is really good. Like, it is a very good production. It feels very authentic to what this show is.
Yeah.
And it makes me just very excited that it's running.
For
and it's
so
running
long.
And it's running for as long as it is. Like it just shows that it's beloved. I mean, I know people have we'll get into it. There's controversial there's one storyline that's very controversial for people, and I don't really know how to like go about it. Like if I were to direct a production of this, like I don't know how I would go about it, but I have my own opinions about why it works, but we'll get into that.
Great.
Let's
dig in.
Great. So we start in a 1960s environment in a very disheveled, underprivileged area called Skid Row. And the sea urchins kind of are like Greek chorus. The sea
urchins
are our, the street urchins.
The sea urchins. Ursula shows up.
Ursula's here. I mean, Alan Menken.
Alan Menken. It all ties together.
Yes. The street urchins, it's like a Dreamgirls, what is that group called?
The
Diana
Supremes.
Ross and the Supremes. Yeah, the Supremes. It's very much the Supremes. that world. 1960s mm-hmm. trio, right? Mm-hmm. And they are our narrators, almost, kind of commenting on everything throughout the production. And we then meet Seymour Krelborn, a very young man living with Mr. Mushnick in Skid Row. He is an orphan. We find out very quick. Audrey, which it says here, is a pretty blonde.
Look, cast whoever you want, but put her in a blonde wig. Put the bitch
in a blonde wig, please. She is a, which I have thoughts about why she needs to be blonde. Even if it is like, which we'll get into it.
We'll get into it.
It doesn't, I don't care who, like, it has nothing to do with who you cast. Like, no. You said, it is about her being blonde, and we'll get into that. Remind me to get into that. With a fashion sense that leans more towards tacky. We find out, it's not, like, necessarily, like, spelled out, but we kind of understand that she is probably in sex work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never, like, fully spelled out. Yeah. So, they lament the stations of their life. And how they, like, want to leave Skid Row in the opening Skid Row or Downtown, which is, again, like, a play on the 1960s song Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Then we meet our coworkers who run, they all work at a flower shop in Skid Row. And the flower shop owner is Mr. Mushnick. And then we find out that there is a sudden eclipse of the sun happening on this night. Seymour finds a mysterious plant that just appears during this eclipse. Total eclipse of the sun. Or, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a total eclipse of the sun.
In my head, I heard total eclipse of the heart.
Oh, yeah.
But total eclipse of the sun. And he picks it up and he buys it from the shop owner that he always gets his plants from, because he's a plant guy. He, you know, mm-hmm. it's giving me.
It's giving Slee.
Yeah. He's a plant daddy. And he then takes it home because he's never seen this kind of plant before. And he takes it home and it's like a Venus flytrap type of plant. He does everything he can to make it grow, but it's just not. And he's so deeply attached to this plant, and he wants to put all his love into it. So he names it after the person he loves most, Audrey. So he names it Audrey too. Audrey doesn't know that Seymour's in love with her, but she is definitely, like, keen on him as well. Like, they are very, very good friends.
Yeah.
And so it's so sweet. They have such a sweet little romance.
It's so cute.
It's so good. So he names it Audrey too. The plant is not thriving.
No.
The plant is not thriving and is dying. And so Seymour is doing everything he can. He's reading all of his books to, like, just try to figure out, like, how can I make this plant thrive. And then as he is trying to, like, talk to this plant to figure out what can I do, he accidentally pricks his fingers on one of the rose thorns that, because they're in a flower shop, right? And he accidentally pricks his finger on a rose thorn, and the Audrey 2 pod sits up and is like trying to get the blood from his finger. Seymour then realizes, and he's like, well, fuck it. I got a reprise of a song to sing.
A few drops shouldn't hurt. As long as you don't make it a habit out of it or anything. It's so funny.
I'll give you a few drops if that'll appease. So, finally, we discover that once he gives the plant blood, that the plant begins to thrive. Grows, like, overnight. As Audrey 2 grows, it becomes, like, a attraction for this flower shop, which is usually getting no business at all. It's, like, really, really not doing well. And to the point that Mr. Mushnick is going to close the doors, which would put all of the people that work there, Audrey and Seymour, in a really bad place. I mean, this is where Seymour lives. you know? So, but then he puts Audrey 2 in the window, and people start coming through asking about, what is that?
This strange and unusual plant you have in the window.
Yes. And while I'm in here, I might as well get 2 dozen roses. So good. So good. So the plant shop starts to thrive because people want to come and see this strange and unusual plant, and then they come in and they buy all their flowers. So things are going well. Because Seymour is the caretaker of the plant, everyone in Skid Row starts thinking of him as a hero, and he has gone from, like, again, zero to hero. And this is his journey. We find Audrey in her, like, home across the street from the flower shop, and we hear her start to talk about what she wants her life to look like and how it is not what her life is. We discover that she is in an abusive relationship with her boyfriend because she's constantly in, like, a sling, or she has a black eye. Like, every time you meet her, she has a new ailment. And one of the famous ones is that she has her arm in a sling. Mm-hmm. And we find out it's because of her boyfriend, an abusive man. And then we find out that her dream is to actually be the ideal, like, Betty Crocker 1960s housewife. Like, she just dreams of plastic furniture and a toaster. And it's very sweet. And it's just, she dreams of a life she sees in the magazines.
Yeah.
She wants frozen dinners. It's so, mm-hmm. so funny. And we find that in the song Somewhere That's Green. Right after we discover what Audrey longs for, we then meet her horrible, horrible, sadistic boyfriend, Oren Scrivello.
DDS. And,
well, and we meet him on his motorcycle in a leather jacket, and he talks about how he's, like, always longed for people to, like, put people in pain. And then throughout the song, we find out that his mother encouraged him to turn it into a business. So he decides that he's going to be a dentist so he can make people be in pain for his work. Oh. And it's so funny.
So smart. Like, it's so such a smart. Smart joke.
Yeah, and he's like an Elvis type character. Mm-hmm. Very much a parody of Elvis Presley.
Played by Steve Martin in the movie.
Yeah, it's Steve Martin. It's so good. This is the part that Christian Borle played in the revival. It's just so great. And in the musical, so the musical is a very small cast, and it's Seymour, Audrey, Mr. Mushnick. So those are our main players, right? And then you have the street urchins the street urchins, three of them, and you have the dentist. The street urchins and the dentist all play the ensemble as well. Mm-hmm. And so Oren Scrivello plays multiple characters throughout the show after you meet him, which is very fun.
Yeah.
And same for the street urchins. They played multiple different roles, which is just so fantastic. Very fun. So anyway, Seymour meets Oren for the first time, and he encourages Seymour to take the plant to get out of Skid Row. Realizing the store's sudden profit is completely dependent on the plant and Seymour, Mr. Mushnick then takes advantage of Seymour's innocence by offering to adopt him as his full son, because he's never actually adopted Seymour. He just is like, you can stay in my basement. So they come into a partnership in the song Mushnick and Son. Seymour accepts because it's like a dream of his to have a father.
Yeah.
And Mushnick treats him poorly, very poorly. And then Seymour then realizes that he's running out of blood at the end of the song and stop and can't feed the plant anymore. So he's like anemic and really dying because he's giving the plant all his blood. And Mr. Mushnick is like, you need to make sure that this plant stays alive. But no one knows
how the plant lives.
That is a secret. So as Seymour is running out of blood and trying to feed the plant, he's like, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. I'm bringing you steaks. And then Audrey, too, for the first time ever, sits up on his own accord and starts speaking to Seymour and is demanding blood and promises that if he's fed, Seymour will have all of his dreams come true. The plant can make all of his dreams come true by helping him get Audrey, by helping him get the like life that he wants. He can be the cool guy, all of these things. He is going to make it happen.
Yeah.
So how is it going to happen? I don't want meat from the market. I need human flesh.
Must be blood.
Must be fresh. And so he convinces Seymour to kill Orin Scrivillo because Seymour has now seen that Orin
is abusive
to Audrey. Mm-hmm. Like very violent abuse. Yeah. Seymour then sets up an appointment with Orin in his dentist office and is intending to kill him for his cruel treatment of Audrey, but he loses his nerve and decides not to commit the crime. Fortunately for Orin, unfortunately for Orin, Orin is addicted to nitrous oxide, which is laughing gas. So every time he does a procedure, he puts on his gas mask and he gets really high. And there's this great little bit where he goes, oh, I'm gonna get some gas. And Seymour goes, oh, thank God. I thought you were going to do it without. He goes, oh, it's not for you. It's for me. Iconic.
Oh, my God. It's so funny.
It's so funny. And so he's getting high on nitrous oxide. Orin is. But the gas device that he puts on to get high gets stuck on the on position, and then he suffocates himself as he's dying of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
It is...
Which is so... brilliant.
It's brilliant, and it's so morbid. It's but it so is dark. So good. What a great way for a villain to die.
But also Seymour literally sitting there with a gun,
yeah,
debating, like,
do I kill need you? To
kill him... I don't know that I have it in me. And then he's just laughing himself to literal death.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Seymour can't... I got confused because Seymour's my dog's name for a second. So Seymour can't bring himself to shoot Orin, and he just lets Orin die in the song Now It's Just the Gas. Seymour then cuts up Orin's body with an axe,
mm-hmm,
off stage, yeah, and feeds it to Audrey too, who is now huge, but not before Mushnick sees that Seymour is doing this act.
Yeah.
He sees the like after effects.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the act one finale. Gosh, I forget so how much good. Happens in this show.
I know. It's a jam-packed little show. Yeah,
it really is. So we're gonna try to breeze through Act 2 then. So we're now in the flower shop, and it is so much busier. The phones can't stop ringing off the hook. Seymour and Audrey can't keep up with it. And Audrey confides to Seymour that she feels really guilty that Orin is gone because she wished it to happen. She, like, finds a lot of guilt in that, which is like, oh, my God, you sensitive soul. No, you're not a bad person. And they admit their feelings for each other, and Seymour promises to protect Audrey and love her in the song Suddenly Seymour, which is my all-time favorite song. It is
beautiful.
A beautiful, beautiful love duet, mm-hmm, and... The lyrics and the promises to each other are just, it's just exactly what you want Seymour and Audrey to hear from each other. Like, it is so well written.
It's so well written, but also it's so simple and so effective. Mm-hmm. And just the when I think about the song, the lyric that always comes to my mind first is, I know things were bad, but now they're okay.
Ugh.
And it's, ugh.
Well, and seeing Seymour stand tall and stoic for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go outside of myself so you feel protected. I can be that for you. Ugh.
Yeah.
I love. I just, it's the best. It is the one of the best love stories ever.
It's so sweet.
So sweet. I used to think that I was an Audrey as a human being, but I'm actually a Seymour as a person, I think.
Yes.
You're like, I've done
your whole life. You absolutely are a Seymour. But with the style of an Audrey.
Work. I love. So, before they can, so they agree that they want to run away with each other. They, like, want to get out of town. But before they can, Mushnick confronts Seymour about Oren's death, and Seymour denies it. But Mushnick wants to give a statement to the police, who have been investigating it. Audrey, too, tells Seymour that he has to get rid of Mushnick or he will lose everything, including Audrey. So, Seymour tells Mushnick that he's going to go talk to the police, but he just needs to make sure that he keeps Audrey 2 safe, and that all the receipts from the shop he kept inside of Audrey 2 to make them safe so no one will find them. So Mushnick climbs inside to get them, but then the plant opens its mouth wide and eats Mushnick.
And it's so good.
It's so good. Very a la Jaws. Like,
yes.
It's great. And so Mushnick climbs inside the plant, dies, searches for all the money from the shop, and screams as he's devoured by the plant in the song Supper Time. And now it's supper time. Not to get confused with Supper Time.
Supper Time. Yeah. Very different songs, very different energies.
From You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. So good. Mm-hmm. Seymour now is the owner of the flower shop and reports. And so now reporters and salesmen and lawyers and agents are all coming to approach him to give him fame and fortune because of this amazing plant that is now humongous. And Seymour realizes, though, it's only a matter of time before Audrey, too, will need to kill again, and that he is responsible morally for it. But he fears that if he gives up this life, Audrey will no longer want him because he's no longer successful. Which is devastating.
Yeah.
So he decides, I have to keep going. But then Audrey too squalls for blood while they're on a lecture tour. And so in front of people, and Seymour threatens, Seymour gets everyone out, and then Seymour threatens to kill Audrey too, just as Audrey walks in asking when Mushnick is going to return from his sick visit from his sister. Seymour then learns that Audrey would still love him without the fame, and decides that Audrey too must die after a scheduled Life magazine interview at the shop. So he's going to collect a bunch of money so they can have a life and then destroy the plant.
Yeah.
Audrey's confused by Seymour's ramblings, but then she like runs home to get her things in order because she's decided that
they're going to have the life that she wanted.
Yeah.
They're going to run off and have a cute little house. And
a matchbox of our own. And they're going to get married. And she's always wanted that. So she's unable to sleep because she's so distressed by Seymour's behavior. But then, she decides, you know what? I'm going to go back and just check on him because I'm worried about him. Audrey goes to the flower shop to talk to him, but he's not there. and Audrey 2 is, and she's like, and Audrey 2 is like, please water me, please, I need some water from my branches. Oh, and it's important to note that Audrey took a sleeping pill because she's struggling to sleep because she, her head, her like anxiety is running wild about is Seymour okay, like, oh my gosh, we're gonna get married, all these things. So she goes to goes to the flower shop to check on Seymour while she's like on these, on this sleeping medication, and then she hears the plant talk, and she's not like afraid of it, she's like, oh my god, you're talking. And I think it's because she took a sleeping pill, so she's like, she thinks she's hallucinating.
Absolutely.
I just like, that's just like a small detail that I find interesting. So she waters it, and then the vines pull her in, and the Audrey 2 begins to eat Audrey. Seymour arrives and pulls Audrey out at the last second, but she's mortally wounded, and her dying wish to Seymour is to feed her to the plant so that after she dies, she can go somewhere that's green.
Ugh.
And she dies in his arms.
And she wants to, like, give him something. And she's like, if you feed me to the plant, then the plant's going to grow, and then you're going to have a beautiful life. And it's so sad.
It's so sad.
It's so sad.
And really effective, like you said, like, about suddenly Seymour. Like, it is a really effective death. Mm-hmm. Devastating. And so Seymour reluctantly honors her request. And then the Life magazine shoot is happening. Patrick Martin from the World Botanical Enterprise tells Seymour that his company wishes to sell leaf cuttings of Audrey 2 so florist shops around America can have their own Audrey 2s. Seymour realizes that this is the plant's evil plan, world conquest. He tries shooting, cutting, and poisoning the plant, but it has grown too hardy to kill. Seymour, in desperation, runs into its open jaws with a machete, planning to kill it from the inside, but he is quickly eaten.
Yeah.
And Patrick, Crystal, Ronette, and Chiffon all search for Seymour. No one can find him. Patrick tells the girls to go ahead and take the cuttings, and then the plant is spread worldwide. Crystal, Ronette, and Chiffon relate that following these events, other plants appeared across America, tricking innocent people into feeding them blood in exchange for fame and fortune. Audrey 2, bigger than ever, appears with open new flowers, revealing the faces of Seymour, Audrey... Okay, I'm going to repeat that so it doesn't go past everyone. Audrey 2, bigger than ever, appears with open flowers, revealing the faces of Seymour, Audrey, Mushnick, and Oren, who beg that plants must not be fed in the finale... Don't feed the plants. Audrey 2 slithers toward the audiences threateningly. End of show.
I love it.
They have me the entire time up until their faces are the plants.
You know what? Honestly, and maybe it's because I have experience with a terrible production of this show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, put the faces in the vines. I'm fine with that.
But it is like a perfect like end of a campy, like very like if you really think too hard about it, you're like, that is a terrifying and devastating fate.
Yeah. But whenever I think about that number, I think about that one video where it's the Crystal Runnett and Chiffon where it's like subsequent to the events you have just witnessed.
Yes.
Like, oh,
so good. The Japanese Obsessed. Tour or something.
Yes. Yes, that's what it is. Incredible. Truly incredible.
That is a great video.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, so that is Little Shop.
Yeah.
One of my favorite. It's a perfect like spooky season show. Mm-hmm. If you are like, it's a great Valentine's show. It's a great
good Arbor Day show.
Yeah, really, really great for Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it is. It's a perfect spooky season show because it is funny and campy while still being like spooky and, you know.
Spooky and like
bloody.
The plant is the plant is, like, funny because it's a plant, but also very scary and ominous. Very. And, yeah. like, from the, yeah, the plant is just so good.
Yeah. Subsequent.
But before we get into dream casting, let's talk about why Audrey should be blonde.
Okay. Audrey should be blonde because her whole arc, especially in the beginning of the show, is her trying to look like what she sees in the magazines, what she thinks and deems as beautiful. So, her having unnaturally blonde hair,
like peroxide blonde.
Peroxide blonde is very important because it shows that she is trying to change herself to fit into what she thinks beautiful is. So if mm-hmm. she is a like natural brunette, it gives her, and I'm not saying people who have peroxide blonde hair, I don't know who does, peroxide blonde hair, like, have insecurity about themselves and where they, like, and what beauty standards are for themselves. Yeah. Like, that's not what I mean. But for her arc specifically, and in this mm-hmm. time period, mm-hmm. she is actively trying to remove anything that makes her close to her natural self. So yeah. removing the color of her hair, wearing way too much makeup, wearing mm-hmm. extremely tight, like, corseted outfits, high heels, all of these things. I mean, she even does, like, her whole demeanor is very, like, if you think it from a, I don't think she's doing it on purpose, but from a psychological aspect, or a psychological standpoint, her, like, almost fairy-like,
so dainty vocal, and so dainty. Delicate.
But yet with the, like, added, she has a lisp and she has
a strong
New York accent. Like, but yet she's still trying to be dainty and, like, a housewife. Like, there's so many elements of, like, hide who I am, hide who I am, hide who I am.
Yeah.
That I think it's very important that her hair tells that story.
I agree.
Because if she's close to natural, it's telling a different story. It's telling a story of confidence that, for her, for this character specifically, that I just don't think she has.
Yeah. And I think that it's important that her hair is specifically blonde, because if you're looking at, like, if I was going to dye my hair at home or do my mm-hmm. hair at home, what is the cheapest way to do it? Bleach.
Yeah, peroxide.
Peroxide. And, like, she does not have, even if she wanted to be, like, a redhead or, like, a different shade of brown or whatever, no. she doesn't have the money for that. She has no. enough money for, like, the bleach.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little yep. purple shampoo. I don't know. But,
No, but it's, like, gotta be a brassy, brassy blonde.
But, like, it makes sense that it's, like, of course, like, she's trying to be these things and to do these things, but she doesn't have the resources to really right. do them or be them.
Right. And I think that once, if we got to see, like, a sequel mm-hmm. and her and Seymour are chilling, hanging out years later with their yeah. children, she would probably have a brown natural hair that, like, she's let her hair grow out.
Yeah.
And right. again, I want to emphasize that I'm not saying I have bleach blonde hair, and I'm not saying that it is because I or anyone who has bleach blonde hair has these, like, underlying insecurities. I mean, maybe you do, but yeah. it in our time period, it is a stylistic choice.
Definitely.
In that time period, yes, it's a stylistic choice, but in her state, I just think it can be argued the, like, why behind it.
Yeah. I
you know. So I think that's very important, and I don't think her character has as much I don't think those her story is as I think it doesn't do as good of a job telling the story if she's not a blonde.
Agreed.
And I need it to be fried. I need it to be like, oh, that hair is not healthy. Like, I need that, you know? But she does everything she can to make... Yeah. Exactly. It's trying way too hard.
Yeah.
So then when Seymour says, take off...
Show me your face clean as the morning.
Ugh.
Ugh! It's so good.
She can be okay. Like, she can take the mask off.
Yeah. And then you can, like... have a moment where she's like, when she goes to the store and then dies, maybe we get to see a moment of her hair being like down and not done, and the like glimpse of like what could have been.
Yeah.
If she didn't die. But she does.
She does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how they changed it in the movie, if you've not seen the movie, the last 15 minutes, there's a new song called Mean Green Mother. Oh, which is a so great good. Song, and I'm really sad it's not in the stage show. But we find out that Audrey 2 is from space, which we find this out sort of in the finale.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly as, like, in your face. And Audrey does end up living, and they live happily ever after.
But there's, like, the question, because you see, like, little Audrey 2s growing.
Yeah, in their yard. So, yeah. I think it's a smart change for the film, but I do Agreed. Like in the original adaptation and
yeah.
how it but is
the stage
how
show
it is
needs
on stage
to be dark
and, yeah,
and I think that it can be darker than any kind of film.
Yes, agreed. Agreed.
That's Dreamcast.
Yeah, I do want to quickly just talk about the relationship between Oren and Audrey, and just how I don't know how to go about making that relationship work in a comedic way, the way I think it's intended when it was first released.
Yeah.
I think that it is important that the comedy of Oren is there. And that, because have you seen the new production?
I have not.
So it is directed to be that Audrey is struggling, and it's, her story is a little bit more weighted than, and Ellen Green's is weighted as well.
Sure, but it's different.
I think she understands the comedy. Ellen Green understands the comedy as well as the weight in a way that I don't know if they're balancing it super effectively for me.
Yeah.
I think it's a little too weighted, and you're concerned for Audrey in a way that I'm like, I don't want to be that concerned for her well-being, because I'm already so concerned for her well-being, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know, but I understand, like, not making light of how horrible the abuse is.
Yeah.
So I just don't know how to go about that. I don't have an answer. It's just more of, like, a comment more than anything.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, times change and our views on, like, what is funny and what is comedy also change. And I think that this is a pretty solid example of, like, you know, in the 80s, this was, like, just, you didn't need to really think too hard about it. It was just funny. But now people, I think, have a deeper understanding of abuse and what it can look like and the effects that it has on people. And I think that makes it not harder, but maybe more challenging to really find the comedy in it. Yeah. And I think that you gotta have the comedy in it.
See, that's what I'm getting at. Like, you have to have the comedy in it, or else it is, like, way too real.
It's too real and too dark for this, like, show about a plant from space.
Yeah. It's like, I know that it's a horrible thing that really happens, but, like, I don't think it's making light of it. I think it's helping take in this plot that is so heavy, and it effectively tells the story in a more, I guess, palatable way. Or it makes you kind of step back and be like, oh, wow, this is really bad. But if he wasn't so funny, like, I would really be having a hard time watching this happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then he dies in such a way that is so, like, juicy. So it's like, he can be this, like, horrible, funny villain.
Yeah.
And just be really, really horrible to Audrey, because then the audience gets the satisfaction of him dying in such a wonderful way. True. And the people that we love are not blamed, because it's no one's fault other than his own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. So well good. Written. So anyway.
Dreamcast.
Okay, let's dreamcast this biatch.
All right. Do we want to start with Seymour and Audrey and work our way down, or do we want to work our way up?
I think work our way up.
Great. So then, Mr. Mushnick. I didn't do the urchins.
No, I think the urchins, like, I want, like, unknowns. Like, let's...
Definitely.
Let's get some debuts.
Some newbies in. So for Mr. Mushnick... these feel so obvious to me.
Yeah,
Danny Burstein and Nathan Lane.
I completely agree. Danny Burstein is the first one I put.
I mean,
Brad Oscar is really good casting.
Brad Oscar is great casting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nathan Lane, obviously, like, this is his track in this. You've
written for him.
Yeah. What's his name? Fucking, Scarface. Sylvester Stallone? No.
Sylvester Stallone. I was like, is that Robert De Niro? No.
No, it's not Sylvester Stallone either.
I've never seen Scarface.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, say hello to my little friend.
Al Pacino!
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see Al Pacino as Mr. Mushnick.
Great. Very threatening.
Yeah, very threatening.
Next is Oren Scrivello, DDS.
Bitch. Okay.
Bitch.
This role, the only person I want to see play this part at this time in my life is Garrett Paladian.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He is perfect for this part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christian Borle is amazing casting. Like,
that's just good casting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree. If I was gonna, there was a friend of mine who I thought of, Daniel Lopez, who played Burrs when I did Wild Party. I was like, he would be so fucking good. He plays crazy so well. And also, that voice is, like, absolutely insane. But I also thought, like, David Diggs would be interesting.
Ooh, okay.
Very different, but interesting.
Yeah, Joshua, thinking about Hamilton, Joshua Henry could do it.
Yeah.
This is Andy Carl's track.
I have Andy Carl written down, because he... Gavin Creel would be great. Yeah,
would be very good.
And which is fun, because I think 10, 20 years ago, Gavin Creel was a Seymour, and now he's an Oren. Think that's a beautiful thing.
I want Oren to be played by a woman.
Sure. By you?
By me. Jennifer Samard type. You know,
Jennifer,
like
Jennifer, oh man. Jennifer Samard?
Jen Colella.
Yep.
Me.
You? Yeah. There's so many women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Audrey too.
I mean, this is so obvious, but, like, they would sing the house down. Alex Newell.
Literally the first person I've written down.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's gonna be shocking coming from me, who... Alex Newell, voice of a fucking monster. It's so good. Not my favorite performer in the world, but, like...
Agreed.
You simply cannot argue with that voice.
And but this is I a think, perfect part for them because you are on off, you sing off stage. Mm-hmm. And like, not to say that people who have done this are not amazing performers, because that's just not true. But this is a great part because what makes Alex Newell so spectacular is what they can do with their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you just stand off stage and put them at a microphone and let them wail and like be funny.
And their voice carries so much like delicious storytelling and inflections, even when they're just speaking.
Yeah. Like, I would need to be on stage to tell the story.
No, they don't need to be on stage. Even if you wanted to do something where like the voice of the plant is like up on like a scaffolding or whatever somewhere so you can see them, like it's I think it would be sick. I think Betty Who would be a very interesting Audrey too. A little softer, a little sweeter, but I think that her voice is so capable of like that kind of manipulative,
like, well, feed me. She goes on for Persephone tonight, or last night. She went on as Persephone this week. Wonder how it went.
I'm sure she was great.
I really wanted to go.
Hey, she's going to be in for a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, but I wanted to see her first performance.
Well, maybe you could still catch her.
Yeah, I definitely will be going to see it.
So Betty Who was my other choice for Audrey.
I love. I'd see her. Well, I'd see her Seymour.
Oh yeah. For Audrey, I've got a fucking grab bag of Audreys.
I mean, yeah.
There's so many ways you could play her, and I think there's so many things you can do with her, so it opens it up to a lot of different kinds of actresses.
Mm-hmm.
I thought a young Catherine Hahn would be nice.
Now, that's who I want to see as Oren Scrivello.
Truly. Like, but current Hahn as Oren Scrivello, young Catherine Hahn as Audrey. I mean, Bonnie Milligan. Duh.
Yeah,
that feels obvious.
I think Bonnie Milligan is, I think a young Megan Mullally.
Yes. I also think, and she was just on my mind, I saw a like video of her. She's a Universal swing for Six. Her name's Cassie Silva.
Yeah. She
also was from Search for the Next Elle Woods.
She's the girl that they did dirty with. She sang the alto line.
They did her dirty. But you know what? She's fucking funny. And I think that she's very interesting. And I would like to see her take on Audrey.
Yeah.
I would also be surprised if she's not done it yet, you know?
Yeah. I also think that, and they're doing a good job, I think, casting this role older, other than LOL Maude Apatow.
Yeah.
Audrey is older. She should be in her, like, late 30s.
Yeah.
Early 40s, even.
Yeah. Like, her biological clock is ticking.
Yeah.
If she wants to have kids, it needs to happen, like, now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to see a 25-year-old play this role.
No, I'm not super interested in that. Unless it's a college production, then, you know, whatever.
Of course. Well, that doesn't count. But I'm... In regards of age, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm just, this show is, I think, a rare occasion where most of the roles are for people above the age of 30.
Yeah. Last but certainly not least, Seymour.
Our boy.
My first thought, and I think he's a little young for it now, but I think, you know, in like 5-10 years, Justin Cooley from Kimberly Akimbo.
That's who I said.
There we go.
Oh my God.
I think he would be so good. He'd be so sweet and like.
Yeah.
I mean.
He would be so good.
Yeah. What is his track in Kimberly Akimbo if not the Seymour track, you know?
Honestly.
Truly. So sweet. Like,
ooh, I'd love to see a young Victoria Clark as Audrey.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, no, that is so funny. That's exactly who I put.
That is so funny. I was like, I don't think I've ever mentioned this person before, but like, it's just, it's them, you know?
He's so, so good.
Yeah, he's so good.
Love that casting. Agree with that casting. Yeah, I also think that this is a role that I would love to see a woman play. I think making Seymour and Audrey a, like, lesbian couple that, like, don't realize, like, Seymour is, like, longing for Audrey and has never been able to be in a lesbian relationship, and Audrey feels like she's not allowed to be because it, like, disrupts her picket fence life, and she doesn't feel like she deserves love, and so she takes the pain of these men. I mean, tell me that that's not the story that they're telling. It
could absolutely be the story that they're telling. You could make that argument. So,
I just did, bitch.
And we'll continue to.
We'll continue to. For every show ever, though. I think that I can always find a reason why it should be gay.
How can I make this about lesbians?
I can always make it about plus-size people and lesbians.
But also, it's like, maybe if they made it to where there are more stories about plus-size people and lesbians, you wouldn't have to do that.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. We don't have... We simply don't have the time.
We don't have the time. We didn't talk about... We can talk about it quickly. Funny Girl closed.
Funny Girl closed. Bye.
For real, though. Bye. Like,
Julie... Honestly, the show closed when Julie played her last performance, in my opinion. I agree. Leah had, like, one more performance in her. I am, like, so annoyed that they let her sing My Man.
Yeah, me too.
And, like, sure, bitch can sing.
It wasn't great, though.
But it wasn't great. And I'm just...
I mean, I'm, she was emotional, but, like...
Sure, of course. But I'm also, like... Julie Benko has talked at length about how the song, like, shouldn't be in the show, about how it's, like, she's talking about being in an abusive relationship. That's not a story that we need to be telling today. About, like, I'm gonna stick with my man. We don't need it. So them being like, yeah, Leah, go ahead and sing that song feels, like, rude to me. But also, I'm, like, I'm sad. I'm very sad for all the actors that are no longer employed. I think that that sucks, and I hate that. But also, good. I'm glad that Funny Girl closed.
It just didn't need to run as long as it did.
No, it didn't.
No. And it sucks, because I love Funny Girl. But, yeah. And I didn't see this production, but it just...
Didn't feel right.
It didn't feel right. It just had a lot of... A show that should be a show that is feminist and, like, brings up a actor. Like, a star moment. And what is so funny about this production is that they tried actively to not make it that. Like, they tried to bring in two movie stars. But who is the shining star? An up-and-comer that no one knew about.
Yep.
It is a show that just does that.
Yeah. And don't fight against it.
Don't fight against it. Let someone have their, like, starring moment.
Yeah, truly. So that's... Bye. Bye, girl.
Yeah, bye, girl. So, yeah, so that's Little Shop.
That's Little Shop. Such a pleasure to revisit it after 3 years.
I know.
And next episode, we're going back to school, bitch.
We're going back to school, bitch. A show that means a lot to Kat and I.
It's truly so meaningful. We're going to be doing High School Musical.
And it'll be our 3-year reunion. We're bringing Jackson on the pod.
Truly. It's gonna be a time.
Yeah, y'all get to meet Jackson officially, which is great.
You're going to love him.
Gonna love them. Gonna love them, kiddo.
You're gonna love them. So thanks.
Yeah, and Kat and I, like, are looking forward to some, like, evolution in our podcast viewing experience, listening experience. So, like, be on the lookout for updates on that in the near future. We kind of said, all right, year three, like, how can we take a step this year? And
yeah,
I think now we really are.
We're gonna do it, bitch. We're gonna do it.
We're gonna do it. You want a hot body? You want a Maserati?
Maserati.
You want a
work bench?
You want a work bench? I wish they did a cast recording.
Me too. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye. See you next time. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to This Podcast Won't Run a Week. If you'd like to support us, be sure to rate, review, follow, like, and subscribe wherever you listen. If you're interested in additional very cool content, you can head over to patreon.com/thispodcastwon'trunaweek. You can check out all of our social media information as well as performance links in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening. We love you lots. Goodbye.